I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard, and it's the food show before Valentine's Day. So this is where all the gluten-free listeners are probably thinking they're going to have to turn off the radio so we don't tempt them with sweet treats they can't eat. Don't do it. We're starting this show with a Valentine to you and to the people in your life who might want to show their love with a cupcake you can actually eat. Let's visit a bakery where they make that kind of thing with our producer, Coy Duggar.
Just east of 90th and Rowan Prairie Village is Emily Cates.
Hello, how are you?
Hello, doing good. How about yourself?
Good.
I step in on a cold February day. My glasses instantly fog as the smells of baked goods waft through the air. Walk-in freezers and refrigerators line the walls. The heavy mixers make the average KitchenAid look like a toy blender. And four bakers work away at kneading and stuffing tarts.
I'm Robin Knight, and I am the owner of Emily Cates Bakery.
Robin named her business after her two daughters, Emily and Katie. The story of how Emily Cates started is actually a love story, not the kind you normally hear around Valentine's Day, like a rom-com between two star-crossed Hollywood actors. Instead, this is about a daughter's love for raspberry cupcakes and a mother's empathy. It all started the summer after Emily's sophomore year in college, when she began to feel sick. Her stomach was constantly in pain, and she had migraines all the time.
By the time Thanksgiving rolled around, and she just looked not herself, she looked unhealthy, and that just led us to the doctor, which led us to a diagnosis originally of just gluten intolerance, and ultimately we figured out that it was celiac disease.
The news was pretty bad, but part of Robin felt relieved. Celiac disease is something that you can manage with a diet, so her daughter wasn't facing a lifetime of medication. But Emily didn't feel the same way. She felt like she would never have another decent cookie or cupcake ever again.
So in all my naivety, I said, oh, that can't be that hard. We'll be able to figure out a cookie. We'll be able to figure out a cupcake. And oh my gosh, it was so hard.
For over a year, Robin practiced and practiced, but didn't really find a way to make anything she was happy with. Then her other daughter got diagnosed with the exact same disease.
And so that's when it got real, and I had to figure it out.
Robin found out that there isn't some set rulebook or formula to make sure that a gluten-free cupcake tastes just like, well, a gluten-filled one. It took a while, but eventually Robin's experiments yielded something she was happy with. Happy to the point where she thought it was a solid business opportunity. But to be sure, she had to call in an expert. The big guns. The Simon Cowell of cookies, if you will. So she turned to her friend Erin Brown with Dolce Bakery out in Prairie Village.
She's a tough cookie, pun intended, when it comes to what she wants in flavors, what she looks for in textures. And so when I had a stack of cookies and a couple of cupcakes that I gave her and said, just tell me what you think about this. And like with her mouth full of a cookie, she's like, oh, you can pay the rent with this. That's when I thought, okay, maybe there's something here.
But starting a bakery isn't easy, especially a gluten-free one, because expansion means teaching new staff an entirely different style of baking.
I'm Amber Abram. I am the manager at Emily Cates Bakery.
She's also the head baker, and part of her job is coming up with new gluten-free recipes.
Do you ever feel like a mad scientist?
Yes. Definitely.
I just had to ask, because these two women have studied baking down to the molecules.
At a molecular level, rice is harder than wheat. That's what creates some of that graininess or grittiness that people typically will find in gluten-free stuff. So we have processes in all of our recipes that mitigate that texture because we don't want it to be like that. So there are a lot of different things we do with liquid levels and how long we let stuff hydrate and different things like that.
And now Emily Cates is working on other gluten-free products like bread and pizza crust.
If I thought getting a cupcake right was hard, now we're like, ugh, bread. It's such a challenge. And we have some. We're getting there. We're pretty happy with where we are, but we want it to just be a little better.
But Robin says the hard work is worth it.
One of our customers hugged Amber. And so it's just such a funny thing because I think people are so happy to have something good.
Like a raspberry cupcake.
That was Coy Duggar speaking with Robin Knight and her staff at Emily Kate, a bakery that supplies lots of retailers around town with their gluten-free treats. They have a whole separate menu on their website just for Valentine's Day, which includes cookie decorating kits with sprinkles and stuff. It is pretty cute. This is a time of year when baking as an act of love might seem challenging if the person you love is gluten-free and you haven't spent the last 10 years getting your technique down to a science like our last guest. Well, our next guest is a gluten-free home cook who's been trying things out in her kitchen, and she has some ideas that she might be able to share. Janet Smith, good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for having me.
I understand that you are a graduate student in geology, so
Correct. Maybe
there's something to the whole science thing?
Oh, I definitely think so. It's all about the method and the process and testing and retesting. And I don't know. So you apply scientific principles to baking. So baking is actually science.
Speaking of Valentine's sugar cookies with sprinkles, you brought some in today that are gluten-free.
Yes.
I tasted mine and all that remains is like a mess of red sprinkles on my desk. Can you tell our listeners like how you made it? Because it just tasted like a sugar cookie to me.
Oh,
it did not taste
so much
like a, you know.
Well, I think that's important in any recipe, whether it's gluten or non-gluten, is the recipe itself. And before I switched to gluten-free, I worked really hard to find the quote unquote perfect, you know, roll-out, cut-out cookie or what I thought was that recipe. And then when I realized that half my family had to be gluten-free, I just started playing around with different flours. And the interview that you just played, when the owner of Emily Kate's Bakery was talking about the grittiness, that is a huge factor. And
yeah, you don't want to feel like you're eating sand.
Correct. And did you taste any gritty?
No, absolutely
okay.
not.
And the flour that I use is a rice flour blend, and it works really, really well for cookies.
So when she talks about how different techniques for mitigating that graininess, or what I would call sandiness,
right?
What are those techniques? What do you do with rice flour?
I actually buy really super finely milled rice flour. There's a couple of brands on Amazon that sell that is like triple milled or something like that. I can't remember, but I just make sure that it's that I buy ultra milled flour. Also, but I've also found rice flour at the Chinese markets in town is really, really finely ground, and it does not have that grittiness at all.
I wonder if that applies even when you're doing something like a cupcake, because a sugar cookie isn't supposed to be like soft and velvety.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. What you don't want to have is after you take a bite of your cupcake or your cookie is to have a leftover feeling in your mouth. And so
totally. That's
where that super fine milled flour or rice comes in.
Can you tell me about one of your favorite baking gluten-free experiments, like
sure,
start to finish, just the idea to
absolutely.
Execution.
So recently, as I've also been on a quest to find really good bread and pizza crust. My 7-year-old son, his favorite food in the world is pizza, and he's gluten-free, and it's really tough to find a good place. So I was sick actually over Christmas and New Year's, and when I was lying in bed, I literally was looking up how to make gluten-free pizza videos. I just thought, I'm going to do this. And so I found a couple of videos online, and we're using a certain kind of flour that I had to buy on Amazon, but it's easy to get. And I followed their instructions to the letter, and it was Neapolitan style pizza, and as good as you'd have at Bella Napoli, or looked like what you would have at Bella Napoli or someplace like that. I cried when I took it out of the oven because it was, in my opinion, perfect.
Can you tell me a little bit about what the tears were about?
Just the fact that it wasn't flat. It wasn't hard. It wasn't ugly. Like, I've made gluten-free pizza with yeast before, and it's always looked kind of rough and ugly. I've got pictures on my Instagram feed where it looks kind of frayed or something like that. And then this time, it was smooth. It looked pretty. And that is really hard to do in gluten-free baking, is having something look nice.
That's also just the act of feeding someone else. When you don't
yes.
feel good about the result, there is something sort of heartbreaking about that. I mean, I realize that in the scope of like all the stories people are hearing on public radio today, that might not be the most heartbreaking one. But there is this feeling of like, oh,
absolutely.
You want to express something when you're feeding someone you love.
Absolutely, you do, especially when it's your children and their friends. I mean, you don't want to be, and you know, this is a first world problem, but you don't want to be that mom who makes nasty food. And so it's really comforting and fun to be able to make something for my children that they can share with their friends and have their friends not care that it's gluten-free.
Can you tell me about a failed experiment that taught you an important lesson that you wish to impart to our listeners so that they can not have to learn it the hard way?
Exactly. For example, just last night I was made a cake to bring in to you all today. And I also had cookie dough because I'm going to make Valentine's cookies for my son's class next week. The cake was terrible. It was just not good. But the thing is, you know, all of us tried it and we were like, oh, this has a really weird aftertaste. And I do blame the flour.
What was wrong with the flour?
It had some protein flours in it that just kind of had a funky aftertaste. It wasn't very clean. And that's one of the things you look for is having a clean taste. I don't want to taste something that should be in hummus in my cake. So
fair enough.
Just keep trying. And don't be afraid to start over.
It sounds like there's also like humility is an important piece of this, because if you had gone into it presenting it to your family, needing them to tell you it was perfect instead of like, hey, we're all the mad scientists in this together.
Absolutely. Because part of the scientific process that I like is sometimes you get what you want when your experiment fails. You definitely learn from that. And so I apply that to my baking, and I'm not afraid to have someone tell me, you know what, this is really not good. So it's just keep trying. And if you don't like it, buy a different flour and try it again.
What do you do with the bad cake, though?
I had to throw it away. Now, I do confess, when I've made a ton of bread, hamburger buns, hot dog buns, and they've all been hard as rocks or something like that. I do grind those up for breadcrumbs and I make meatballs. So
that's good.
There's a positive outcome. But cake, you really don't have any other option. You can always eat it. I mean, it's still cake. It just has a weird aftertaste or something. Or it might look weird.
Something that people talk about with gluten-free baked goods, or used to, and maybe this is improving or just people's expectations are shifting, but there can be a lightness to baked goods that it seems hard to achieve with gluten-free.
Very much so. Because I think part of the problem is people don't add enough water or liquid to their gluten-free flour. There is definitely a ratio increase in flour to water. And so
like if you're using a recipe that was not meant to be gluten-free,
correct,
add water.
Yes, or whatever liquid the recipe might call for, like milk or something like that, because you definitely need that extra hydration. A lot of times people can, you know, they think, oh, I can do this cup for cup. Well, kind of. I've had experiences where it's really hard. Like the final product is hard as a rock because there just wasn't enough moisture.
Or the other option is just embrace like the idea that maybe you're going to make a denser but perhaps moister baked good. Because I have had that variety of gluten-free baked good. And if you go in expecting that, it can really be like, that's what I was going for. Thank you.
Sure, absolutely. But lowering expectations. Why? But I've been doing this a long time, just in my house. So I feel like I'm a little snooty about raising my expectations. I'm like, okay, I've made the rock hard cookies before. And so I'm trying to aim higher.
So just before we go, can we talk a little bit about the sugar cookies for Valentine's
Day?
Sure,
absolutely.
Because maybe there's some people out there who would love to know how to do that. So you talked about making cookie dough for those,
yes,
for your son's class.
Yes.
What are your tricks? Any tricks and tips?
To buy the right flour. I buy a rice blend flour online, and I've tried almost all of the grocery store blends, and there's probably one that I like from the grocery store that works in a pinch, but the one that I found online, and I can give you the link or the name of it after we're done, but that is truly a cup for cup. I mean, I know I just said, oh, you got to increase the hydration, but you can use that one. I literally just followed my recipe with the butter and everything to the letter, and it works just fine.
And what kind of flour do you use for that?
It's called Ryze, R-Y-Z-E. It's a company out of Boulder, Colorado.
So it sounds like just knowing, finding the right products for your personal taste and the right recipes and the right adjustments. And it takes time, it sounds like.
It definitely takes time. And unfortunately, gluten-free baking can be kind of pricey. So if I'm doing it, I really want to make sure that it counts.
Do you have any advice for the people out there who are maybe early in their experimentation and needing some encouragement to be patient with themselves?
Yes. Add more salt if you're doing a converted recipe, because salt makes everything better as far as taste goes. And just don't be discouraged if your cookies are rock hard or something along those lines. Just keep trying and try a different flour.
Janet Smith, area gluten-free baker, thanks so much. I am Gina Kaufman, and after this break, the food critics will be here to help us find some delicious hot drinks around town. If there's a steamy specialty drink that you love, like a rosemary latte or a velvety matcha, you got to tell us about it. 816-235-2888. This is KCUR's Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard, and you just heard it, high of 20 degrees. So we are talking about hot beverages in and around Kansas City with our food critics. You can call 816-235-2888. Give us your recommendations. I'm obsessed with hot drinks, and I want a new fave. 816-235-2888. Coffee, tea, hot cocoa, whatever. Two of our regular critics are with us, Mary Block and Jenny Vergara. Mary blogs around food at Around the Block, and Jenny's the managing editor of Feast Magazine in Kansas City. Hi to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
We are also joined by a tea enthusiast, Q Dyer. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Hello.
So when you say you're a tea enthusiast, I want you to explain that, because you actually go with a friend who's been on the show before. The two of you go on what you call tea quests.
We do. And really, it started very minimalist organically. We generally have a brunch at our house on the weekends, and sometimes he'd bring a new tea that he bought. And it's gotten to the point where, like, he gets in the door and it is a race to turn that tea kettle on, because we will have between 3 to 5 pots in an afternoon between the two of us.
And so tell me about the tea quests.
Oh, the tea quests. They really started from our brunches, and then we started going to the Midwest Tea Fest together, I think for the last 3 or 4 years now. And so going there, we would discover all of these local tea shops and specialty places, and we would be like, okay, so we have to hit up that place and this place and that place, and we would just go and do as is our wont.
So you seek out on different adventures, different places that have tea, and you try as much as you can.
Mm-hmm, to go enjoy the atmosphere and learn new things, really.
So we have some of your favorite discoveries to talk about. How about a place in Lawrence that has kava?
Yes, and actually me and Miss Mary and Miss Jenny were in the green room just talking about it. There's the Mana Bar out in Lawrence where they do kombucha and kava. And I think kava is a very interesting beverage that should be on more people's radars, because it is a crop from the Pacific Islands, which includes Polynesia and Hawaii and Micronesia. And the beverage is made from the kava root and is prepared very much like a matcha as an emulsion. And it's an acquired taste, I want to say. Like, matcha will get you halfway there, and then you have to take the leap, because it's kind of green, kind of gray, kind of brown. But what I think is really interesting is it's a great caffeine-free alternative to tea. And that,
I mean, it has maybe the opposite effect of caffeine, right?
Yeah, it actually produces sedative, anesthetic, and euphoric properties.
So,
and you feel it.
That. Yeah, Jenny, I mean, you have talked about this drink too.
I have done the kava. Yeah. in fact, it was at the very same place.
Mm-hmm.
And I walked in there really as a newbie, not knowing, and was kind of led to it by the gal behind the counter. And it's we were just kind of describing it. And it's when you're sitting in your chair, I found myself with a friend having a glass. And as the conversation went on, I could feel my body language just relaxing into my chair.
Did you need like a ride back to Kansas City?
No, it's not buzzy. It's just real. Like everything in your body really relaxes. It's the strangest. It's kind of It is very euphoric. I mean, there's a happy sensation. Now, I had a little on the back end. We talked about that kind of coming, you come down off of it a little bit, or at least I did because I'd never done it before. And the gal kind of said, your first time is, you have to get kind of an acquired taste sort of thing. But it was really interesting.
So this is Mana Bar in Lawrence. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to go through a couple of these TQuest places and then we'll branch out a little bit. Head Rush in Gladstone.
It's Winadib and I, that's our haunt after we go ice skating together. We're so twee, we go ice skating. but we really, really love going there because they are they roast their own coffee. So you walk in the front door and immediately to your left is their coffee roaster. But more than that, they also have an in-house tea brand by Miss Nancy. She's the owner's wife. And so she has just honestly more tea than I would ever expect from such a little place. You can get literally anything you want, black, green, white, pu'er, herbal, anything that you're super interested in. And I think if you were to ask Miss Nancy, she would push you towards the Iron Goddess of Mercy, which is one of the nicest oolong teas you're going to have on the market. But what I really like when I go there is it's one of the few places in town that I can find a matcha latte.
Mm. A matcha latte. I feel like those are becoming common, but maybe this is exceptional in some way.
I want to say it is because they also offer lots of flavors, which is not something that I had encountered before. So you can get like a blueberry matcha latte, and I think that's absolutely wild.
So, and then finally, you are recommending a place in Liberty that has tea parties.
There is a place in Liberty by the name of Anna Marie's Teas, which is just absolutely delightful. We actually discovered them at the Midwest Tea Fest this last year, and they always have a humongous booth because they offer an extremely wide range of teas. And my favorite is their pineapple upside down tea, and it's just a fragrant black tea that's really nice in the afternoon.
Okay, so we are going to be getting more tea recommendations later in the show, but let's explore a little bit of coffee. And Q, you're going to start us out with our conversation here about Pirate's Bone, but you are not the only one recommending this locale. So what do you get at Pirate's Bone?
When I go to the Pirate Bone, if I'm not having a nitro coffee, which I think some of my favorite nitro coffee in town is from Pirate Bone, I'm getting the dirty horchata. And I actually specifically spoke to Zaid about this.
Zaid Consuegra, the owner.
Oh, he's fantastic. So the dirty horchata is an in-house blend of almond and soy milk with their horchata, which is a rice-based beverage with a little bit of cinnamon, a little bit of vanilla, and then he tops it off with a double shot of espresso. It is to die for.
Jenny, what do you get at Pirate's Bone?
I'm with her. The dirty horchata is really great. I actually am also recommending something called the Bowl of Soul, which is a tea drink. So I should turn it over to the tea expert at this point. But black tea brewed with steam milk and sweetened with just simple syrup in-house. It's really simple. Mm-hmm. But I love the name. And there's just something very comforting about it. They have another one called Otono, I think is how you pronounce it.
This is the one that caught my attention. Go on.
It's a hot espresso base drink, basically, but it has a house spice mix that's in it, and then pumpkin seed milk. So the one thing you need to know is that this is a vegan restaurant as well. Mm-hmm. So all of their milk products, and I put that in quotations, air quotes, is nut-based, basically. There's a lot of different ones and oat-based that you can get there, which is really interesting. So pumpkin seed milk was something I hadn't had before, and I really enjoyed it.
That was my first experience as well.
Yeah, and it's garnished with a little star anise. So it's just, you know, that spice that's in it is kind of, it's a little chai adjacent, maybe. I don't know, you know, but good, delicious, really good.
So, Jenny, you are also recommending a handful of spiked hot beverages, some of which sound very elaborate. Can you share a favorite or two from that category with us?
All right, I'm going to start at Swordfish Tom's because I was kind of teasing the photo out online before the show. The owner, Jill Coxon, has this little cute, teeny tiny cocktail bar in the Crossroads. If you haven't been, you must, called Swordfish Tom's. And she's doing most bars will do hot toddies for you if you ask them. And it's basically just kind of water, lemon, usually some bourbon, and a little bit of sweetness in simple syrup form. She certainly does those as well. But she also has a couple of them on her menu that I think are particularly interesting. One's a version of a Tom and Jerry, which is very similar to kind of an eggnog. It's very creamy. It's egg-based. She does hers warm and calls it the Cohen Flip with a little kind of political nod there with that.
I just caught that.
Yep. But it's delicious. And, you know, I love a Tom and Jerry to begin with. So just a warm, comforting, creamy, a little bit of spice in it. You know, some eggs, the flip part of it is obviously the eggs that are in it. It's just delicious. Very interesting. So, and she has two or three on her menu. One is a kind of a spiced pear. Another one is orange based, that are all warm cocktails. Delicious.
Mary, you also have some adult beverages on your list. Some that are standards that people would recognize and some that sound very unusual and exciting. I like your recommendation at the Monarch Bar and I need you to tell me more.
Okay. Well, in the Monarch Bar, there is a parlor room in the back. It's a more upscale version. You can rent it out. You can go for a special experience. And Kenny Kors, who is the bartender back there, has a drink called the Standalone. And it's Jermaine Robin Antique Brandy, Large Bonded Apple Brandy, Plantation Pineapple Rum, an Herbal Bitter, and Oolong Tea. It's not for the faint of heart.
No, but this is like, this sounds amazing. And like, hot drinks are often treated like dessert, whether they're of the alcoholic variety or not. And this is interesting to me in that it's a hot drink that seems more herbal and earthy.
True, but with the brandy, it might still be a after dinner drink. But it sounds very warm and comforting.
And also, I Am Root at the restaurant at 1900. Similar idea.
They have an aged aquavit, a root vegetable, mushroom stock, and cellar bitters, and they put that together and serve it warm.
So kind of soup like.
Yeah, in a, you know, mug, cup type of thing.
Now, Jenny,
that would be delicious.
Yeah, you also have a broth-based hot drink recommendation.
So this is at Savoy. Caitlin Corcoran, obviously, is the owner there. And this was kind of a joke that started kind of between her and I, actually, after, because I love the mussels at Savoy. So when you go in, there's always a little broth left at the end of the bowl. And if you have no bread, you know, you're not going to pick the bowl up, obviously, in a nice place like that. Put it to your lips. So she takes
it
to the back.
Some people might, and let's not frown upon it.
My husband would just ask for more bread.
I'm not judging. I'm not judging at all. But to her credit, she takes that good broth back in the back, pours it in a little shot glass, and brings it back out to you with a little side of bubbles. And we started calling it the bubble back that you would get after you ordered the mussels at Savoy. And she said, this has become a thing, I have to tell you. This was kind of a joke that you and I did kind of the first couple times you came in. But she said, now I'm doing it for others. And she said, and it's just a splash. I don't want to give anybody the impression that you get like a drink for free. And it's lovely because you've got this rich, buttery broth that obviously has white wine and it's been kind of sitting and soaking with all these mussels. And you just kind of shoot it like a shooter. And then you've got the tingles of the bubbles that basically clean your palate. And it's lovely. And it's a lovely kind of piece of hospitality service that you would expect at Savoy.
Well, so this, but the whole broth as drink thing, it's interesting because a couple years ago we were talking about like the whole bone broth craze, mm-hmm. just to sip on some bone broth like you do. Mm-hmm. And then now it seems like maybe that has evolved into broth as ingredient and something that comes in a mug and something that you drink rather than having for dinner.
I think most people would look at some sort of broth as being very medicinal and it has medicinal purposes and it's used that way. And so to put a little nip of something into it to just kind of kick it up even more so, it makes total sense to me.
We'll call 816-235-2888 to get in on our conversation about hot drinks. We've just gone down a bit of a rabbit hole with the savory hot drink and the experimental cocktail that is warm, the bubbly back at Savoy, but we're talking about all of it, cocoa, coffee, tea, whatever. 816-235-2888. We want to know about your favorite in town. Okay, so real quick, as promised, hot cocoa. When done right, I think that this is, and you can quote me, super dreamy. Where do you guys get it? Mary, you have a lot of cocoa recommendations.
I do. I love good hot chocolate. At Parisi Coffee, they have a chocolato, which is rich molten chocolate with a house-made flavored marshmallow. Mm. And you'll definitely need a spoon for this. Think chocolate soup. Mm. So it's kind of a dessert, kind of a drink.
The house-made marshmallow, I'm going to need you to say more about it.
You know, marshmallows that you get in a store are just sort of sticky sweet. And this is just a lovely version that's not quite so...
They're lighter.
Yeah.
And not so dense.
Right.
And so, okay. And that is also a trend.
Yes.
But go on. So this Parisi hot cocoa.
Yep.
I'm listening.
Okay. And then Hi Hat has Aztec hot chocolate. The Hi Hat is a tiny little coffee shop in Westwood Hills, and they make a spicy hot chocolate using bark from an Aztec dark chocolate, which you can buy next door at Anador's Fine Chocolates. But I urge people to call ahead. It is a winter special that's not always on the menu. Now, if they don't have it today, they probably aren't ever going to have it, but it should
today
be.
Today is the day.
Yeah, they should have it. And then my other recommendation is at Key Coffee. Both their River Market and Nelson Museum locations serve Askenosi hot cocoa, and it's just a really good chocolate, and it makes a great hot chocolate.
You know, the Askenosi, we've talked about them before. They're like the ethically sourced and all of that. When you drink hot chocolate made with a chocolate like that instead of a powder, can you taste the difference?
I think you can, because it's a much richer, cleaner taste. It's better. Just like if you have a brownie with real chocolate versus cocoa powder, you can tell the difference.
That's right.
And so other hot cocoa recommendations around this table?
Oh, I have one. It's at Yum Boutique Bakery, and it's over kind of by the Nelson now. They used to be over on 39th Street, and they've now moved to this groovy new location. But if you think about it, you know, where would the best chocolate be if you were going to make your own hot chocolate? And that would be probably a pastry shop or a bakery. And so Anne is a wonderful pastry chef, and she does a lot of classic cookies and pies and cakes, kind of traditional grandma's type desserts, but really good. And she makes her own hot chocolate in-house, which makes total sense because she has access to really, really good chocolate. And she makes it in three flavors right now, I think. Original, she has what she calls kind of a Mexican spice, which I'm assuming has cinnamon, maybe a little cayenne in it. And then also salted caramel. I just cannot not go in there and get, I have to get the salted caramel, whatever. That's just my jam. I love anything kind of butterscotch flavored. And this has that nice kind of creaminess of caramel kind of in the background, butteriness, if you will. And then the deep dark chocolate. It's just an excellent cup of hot cocoa.
I'm dying for that right now. Call 816-235-2888 if you want to join this conversation. There's still a little time, but you're going to need to call us fast. I'm Gina Kaufman here with the Food Critics. We are talking about hot drinks. Specialty drinks have been our focus so far. We'll see where that goes when we return. We'll be right back. We're back. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR Central Standard, and the Food Critics are leading us on a hot beverage odyssey through our icicle of a city. We've got some of our regulars, Mary Block and Jenny Vergara, along with a specialty critic, Q Dyer, a tea enthusiast who goes on tea quests searching out great tea. These adorable self-created field trips, basically. Hi again, everyone.
Hello. Hi there.
Hello.
So we've gone down a bit of a rabbit hole, admittedly, talking about very elaborate specialty drinks. Why don't we step back for just a minute and get some simple hot drink ideas for the purists out there? What do you say?
Absolutely.
Sure.
So, Q, where would you send a tea purist? Looking at your list, I'm thinking Tea Market, Shang Tea?
I would say Tea Market or Shang Tea. Tea Market, I think, is an absolutely delightful little shop. It's located in the Crestwood area, just south of the plaza. And Miss Stacey's shop is an absolute dream because when you walk in, there is a wall of just floor-to-ceiling tea, and it's got that rolling ladder, and it's absolutely fantastic. The last time that I went in, actually, I wanted a certain tea that she had to go make, and she blended a tea by hand in front of me, and it was absolutely magical.
Wait, what is this tea? I need to know more.
The tea was called Sencha Claus. It was one of her Christmas teas. And so, of course, the base was of a Japanese Sencha, but then it had sliced almonds.
Sencha is a green tea.
Sencha is a very bright, extremely green, delicious green tea. Yes. And so the Sencha blend included sliced almonds, cinnamon, orange slices, vanilla, safflowers, and pink peppercorns. It was Christmas in a cup.
That sounds lovely.
Mm-hmm.
That does sound good. Like crazy good.
Yeah. And I didn't realize that there was this sort of like service component to, I thought it was a shop you go in.
No, she's actually got a little bar in house where you can go and she'll make you a latte, or if there's any sort of tea on her shelf, she'll happily make you a cup and give you a recommendation.
And so that's Tea Market in Crestwood. What about Shang Tea?
Shang Tea is this lovely little shop that's located inside of Crown Center. And what I like about them is it's a lovely little eatery. It's not just a tea place. So you can go and you can have some dumplings. You can have a moon cake, which is a lovely little pastry that's filled with like red bean paste or lotus seed paste. If you haven't had one, please go try one. But what I like is off to the side, they've got this alcove that's just this giant tea shop. And it's not just tea. It has all the accoutrements you could want. So it's got tea sets and pots and filters, anything that you need to get started in making tea. And if you go, I think you should treat yourself. And if not just smell, at least buy. They've got this wild white tea cake, which is a pressed tea of cake. And it'll set you back for, you know, $350, but it makes 300 cups of tea.
Mm. Interesting.
I think
white tea is kind of what they're known for, if I remember correctly.
Yes.
Yeah. We have the story of Shang Tea and the man who runs it and his relationship with tea growing in China. We have a story about that. If you go to kcur.org, we've got it there. Just search for Shang Tea. Mary, what's your top pick for just coffee?
Well, I love coffee drink of choice is a latte. But at Messenger Coffee in Ibis Bakery in the Crossroads, if you order a small espresso, they give you a shot of sparkling water as a chaser. And it's basically what Jenny
that
was
is
saying.
Just brilliant.
You know, with the shot of bubbly after the mussels. The first time somebody at my table got that, and I went back to the server and said, okay, I'm sorry, I don't get it. What is this and why are you doing it? And they explained that it was sparkling water and it's just really refreshing to have it after a strong espresso. And he was right.
Well, so, and that seems like, I mean, pardon me for introducing one of the downsides of drinking coffee, but it seems like that might help with the whole coffee breath phenomenon.
Well, probably that. Plus, you don't get as dehydrated, which,
it
you know,
coats
with
your
coffee, you should drink water.
Yeah, it coats your tongue, and I think the bubbles kind of clear it off.
And then, so, Jenny, what would be your pick for a more commonly available coffee drink than the kinds of things we've been talking about so far?
So, I don't really have a common coffee drink, but I do have a warm cocktail that I'm going to recommend, and it's up in Lee Summit. It's the most basic of warm cocktails. We talked about it earlier. It's the Hot Toddy. And, excuse me, this is at Libations & Company. This is a cute, I shouldn't say cute, this is a handsome, this is a substantial cocktail store that sells cocktail accoutrement. It sells mixers, and it sells all of the locally made and produced bottles of booze there in their shop. They also have a lovely bar, which they're happy to make you a cocktail, and they have a rotating cocktail menu that's seasonal. So if you're interested in having, you know, building your bar at home or learning craft cocktail techniques, this is the place to go in Lee Summit. But at Libations & Company, one of my favorites is just the Hot Toddy, the simple Hot Toddy. They make theirs with four roses, I believe, lemon, a little hot water, and then they have kind of a vanilla spiced mixer that they use, which I believe is from Boozy Botanicals, if I'm not mistaken. And it's just, I mean, if you are ailing in any way, this is the cure. This is the cure.
And Mary, you've also got a Hot Toddy recommendation.
I do. At Press Penny Tavern, they have a hot section on the menu. So you can get one of those hot toddies that Jenny described. They've got hot chocolate. They've got hot butter rum. And they even have hot apple cider, which is nice.
Yeah, that is nice. Let's talk to Trish. Trish is calling us from South Hyde Park. Trish has called 816-235-2888. Trish, what are you recommending?
I'm recommending the Bulletproof Coffee from Dream Coffee at 41st and Truce.
Describe, explain.
Okay, it's I had tried Bulletproof Coffee when I started doing a keto diet, and I don't know all the ingredients, but I know it involves butter and some sort of oil. And I thought it was horrible. And then I heard about this little locally run business opening up in the space where Urban Cafe used to be. And I stopped by, and the Bulletproof Coffee is like the best vanilla latte I've ever had.
But it's just like it's a buttery, oily coffee.
Yeah, it.
This is a trend.
Oily though, it just tastes like kind of a rich cream. I don't get any butter or oil taste at all. I just get a, you know, there's a little bit of sweetness and a really nice vanilla.
It does seem like there would have to be a technique to this, because what I imagine if I were to just throw these ingredients together at home, my imagination doesn't say tasty, but this is a trend.
And it's a blender. That's the key.
That's the trick, is the blender.
You do have to blend it together, or you do end up with the oil slick on top. And I know this because I was a bulletproof coffee person for about a year. So, yeah, I mean, if you don't blend it, you're drinking nothing but butter and oil on top. But
so, Jenny, Trish is recommending the bulletproof coffee at Dream Coffee. Is there any place in your year of experimentation that you found did it well out there in the world?
You know, I ended up making mine at home, and I don't even want to tell you the lengths I had to go to in a hotel room at one point with like a little hand blender, one of those, you know, push the buttons and it kind of whirs. I've used a lot of different ingredients. You're supposed to use really good grass-fed butter made from cows who have been eating grass.
Of course you are.
Yeah, very expensive. And so, you know, it was interesting. You know, for about a year, the one thing I'll say is that the fat that's in the drink, both from a butter perspective, and it's MTC oil that is typically in butter, bulletproof coffee.
What is MTC oil?
It's the brand of oil that this guru that has come up with bulletproof coffee basically is recommending. And it's just supposed to give you a little boost of energy. But those two things together really do satisfy your hunger. So your brain is looking for fat to say it's satisfied. And this totally tricks your stomach into thinking it's full and had a beautiful meal and it's satisfied because it has this lovely buttery, rich fat in it. And then, of course, it tastes like a latte if you do it right.
Can I just have a bar of chocolate with my coffee instead?
You know, I'm dating a salesman, so there you go. I mean, you know, they for a hot minute, every salesman you knew was doing bulletproof coffee, so we decided to jump on the bandwagon and try it.
That's funny. Okay, so let's get back to our recommendations. Jenny and Q are both recommending drinks at Monarch Coffee, not to be confused with Monarch Bar, a place we discussed earlier. Mm-hmm. Q, start us off.
Of course. I love the location of Monarch. They look like an Instagram photo on the inside. I think I love all of their sweaters and their shirts. But what I love when I go in there is two things. The first being that they make an in-house oat milk. And that was the first place in town that I had ever had an oat milk. And I'm very conscientious of non-dairy milk alternatives. And so for that to be their only non-dairy alternative in-house, they have to be very proud of it. And they should be, because oat milk has this beautiful creamy mouthfeel. It's got a great viscosity. And so if you go in for a latte, you can't go wrong.
And they do have dairy milk, but this is their only non-dairy alternative.
That is correct.
And it's made in-house.
Gotcha. I don't know how. I wouldn't know.
You're right about oat milk. I never thought about it, but it does have a creamy mouthfeel to it. It really makes a difference.
So what are you recommending there?
If I go in and I want to treat myself a little bit, I mean, go in and try something off of their seasonal specialty menu. And the one that I had most recently, if I can figure out on my notes, here it is. The Figment of Your Imagination, which all of their cocktails are. It's a mocktail at the end of the day. And so the Figment of Your Imagination is their in-house emissary espresso, Turkish figs, aquafaba, simple syrup, and walnut bitters.
What is aquafaba?
Aquafaba literally means bean water, and it is from the can of, chickpeas.
Whoa, the stuff that you drain out.
The stuff that you drain out. I don't know what it is with
you know
the
what?
Water.
I wish the way that looks is exactly how that sounds. Aquafaba is exactly what comes out of a chickpea can,
You know what? I wish that our listeners could see Mary Block's face throughout many moments in today's conversation. Mary.
What can I say? Some of these just...
She's not ready for an aquafaba latte.
Yeah, exactly. Give me a latte any day.
Q, sell us on this.
All right. So when it comes to aquafaba, what's really interesting about it, I don't know what happens in the can, but maybe the chickpea releases like a collagen or some sort of gelatin, but it makes the water in the can very viscous. And it actually is used as an egg replacer in a lot of vegan baked goods. And when you beat it, it becomes very frothy and thick. And so in this mocktail, it just makes for, again, a really nice mouth feel.
Okay, and so the other ingredients, Turkish figs.
Yeah.
Go on.
It's got Turkish figs in it. Great. If you haven't had a fig, eat a fig.
Kind of like a date would kind of add sweetness and texture,
exactly.
I would think. Yeah.
A nice fruitiness to help balance out that, from the walnut bitters, which if you haven't had a walnut bitter, of course, it tastes nutty. But there's also a nice hint of cocoa and a nice hint of cola. It's a very well-rounded drink.
Okay, so I feel like I understand the ingredients now, but what does the drink taste like at the end of the day?
Good. It's a coffee cocktail that's a little creamy. It's got that under hint of nuttiness. It works. It's hard for me to explain.
So Jenny, you are recommending a strawberry rosehip tea latte at Monarch Coffee.
Yeah. And if you learn nothing else from obviously these two coffee drinks we're recommending at Monarch, I think what you have to understand is much like a craft cocktail bar, every single element of these drinks is well thought out. And they are doing, a coffee cocktail is a great way to put it. I mean, there's no booze in it, but you definitely get the sensation that they are pulling things together, flavors together, and profiles together that are really, really interesting. So if you're looking for something unusual and out of the ordinary that's absolutely delicious, Monarch is the place to go. So I'm recommending the strawberry rosehip tea latte, and it looks like beautiful, frothy strawberry milk in a glass, even though it's warm. It's basically made with strawberry beetroot syrup, which I suspect gives it some of its color. Rosehip tea, which is made from the heart, my understanding is the heart of the rose, so kind of rose petal-y. Steamed milk and some crushed rose petals on top, just a little tiny pop of color on top. So it separates out. It's got this beautiful pink latte on the bottom, made with the rosehip tea, and then it's got this frothy white top. And then just a little sprinkling of kind of red crushed up rose petals. It's beautiful.
I mean, it feels like aromatherapy that you drink.
Yeah. But, and it isn't overwhelming. I will say you can have some food elements that have like rose water in it. And sometimes it's really overwhelming. It's like eating grandma's sachet in your mouth. It's like a terrible, terrible experience. But this is not that. This is very much in the background. And the sweetness kind of helps. But, there's definitely an essence of rose certainly ripping all through this when you're using rosehip tea.
So, Mary, for the person who has been listening, maybe making some of the same faces you have been, what do you recommend as a hot drink for that listener?
I would go to Julep, and it's a whiskey bar in Westport, and have a traditional Irish coffee. They have Paddy Irish whiskey, messenger coffee, turbinado, which is a raw sugar, little soft whipped cream on top. Perfect. It's a great
dessert. That's an after dinner drink.
Yeah, it is. And what better on a cold winter's night like tonight?
Any other more perhaps straightforward hot beverage recommendations? Something that is not unfamiliar but is exceptionally good.
I have one. I think it would be remiss of me to not bring up my haunt. And by my haunt, I mean I go there 3 to 4 times a week. And that's going to be Mildred's in the Crossroads. I mean, they've got a main street location. I don't go there. I go to the Crossroads location. And what I love when I get there every single time is going to be, it's a soy cortado. And it, without fail, someone always asks me, what is that? What are you drinking? And so I thought I would tell you about it. So a soy cortado, I get a soy cortado. I am lactose intolerant, so everything is always non-dairy. Mm-hmm. But a cortado, sometimes called a Gibraltar, the cortado is a Portuguese word to mean cut. A Gibraltar is the shape of the glass, so language at coffee shops sometimes tends to differ. So what it is the beverage is roughly equal amounts of steamed milk cut with an equal amount of espresso. So it's maybe 4 ounces, but it's simple, it's clean, it's easy to drink. I love it.
And Mary?
I would suggest going to Bowling's in River Market. They serve a hot sake. So instead of having the traditional hot tea that comes with your Chinese meal, have a little sake instead.
Mm-hmm. Do you know they also serve a, why am I blanking on the name of the flower? Dang it.
Lotus?
No.
No.
I'll put this on Twitter later at KCURCST.
Nice segue.
Jenny, you are recommending a particular chai destination, and little known fact, I'm kind of a chai snob, so convince me.
Okay, Korma Sutra is an Indian restaurant that we all know and love. They do they only have one location now. It's out in Lenexa off 87th Street, and they do a masala chai. as a freebie, complimentary at the end of your meal. And they will push it on you at the end of the meal. They will push it on you at the register. They will ask you if you want a to-go cup. And it is absolutely delicious. If you love masala chai, it is absolutely great. And it's, you know, it's just simple black tea. It's got some sweetener in it, obviously, some dairy. I do believe that they use dairy in it, but it's just so comforting, and all the cinnamon and nutmeg and the spices that go into it.
Convinced.
Yeah.
Also,
my favorite.
That flower is chrysanthemum. They have chrysanthemum tea at Bowling's.
There we go.
Good to know.
Our time is up. Jenny Vergara of Feast Magazine, thanks so much. Awesome info. Awesome ideas.
Thank you.
Mary Block, thank you. Definitely interested in drinking with you in the wintertime.
There you go.
And Q Dyer, thank you so much for stopping by. I love these tea quests.
Thank you so much for having me.
Our list of the best hot drinks in town will be online at kcur.org/centralstandard. I hope it goes without saying, if you're getting a boozy hot drink, also get a safe ride home. It's slick as it is. Talk to us on Twitter. We're at KCURCST. This show is produced by Melody Rowell with Chris Young, Coy Duggar, Suzanne Hogan, and intern Salisa Kalakal. Sylvia Maria Gross is our senior producer. Linda Scher runs the board for us every day. And our theme music is by Spoonbender Labs. I'm Gina Kaufman.